Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. We have a packed docket for you today. First, Lori Vallow case update. Allegedly, this is not the first time she has hidden the children. Second, Letitia Stauch giving jailhouse interviews. Third, the missing Colorado woman's husband making a plea for her safe return. Fourth, new Ahmed Arbery case updates and some new video. Fifth, our dumb criminal contestant winner from last week, as well as our contestant for today. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for watching. As stated, we have a packed docket today. First, if you haven't already done so, please hit that little subscribe button. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live. And as always, leave us a comment about what we discuss here on Crime Talk. First on the docket, a Lori Vallow case update. For those who do not know or are not familiar with the Lori Vallow case, she is charged with two counts of desertion of her children, Tylee and JJ. She's been arrested when she was in Hawaii, apparently possibly looking for the missing children. Who knows? But she was with husband number five, Chad Daybell. She's now currently in an Idaho jail awaiting prosecution. She doesn't have another court date for another couple of weeks. And her attorney, and frankly, is not doing a great job in this little criminal defense attorney's humble opinion. There are investigations being conducted by the Idaho Attorney General as it relates to the death of Tammy Daybell, Chad Daybell's wife, who passed away just weeks before he and Lori Vallow got married. Well, there's some new allegations out today. It's alleged that this is not the first time that Lori Vallow has hidden her children. According to reports, Lori Vallow was reportedly sued by her ex-husband for allegedly hiding their daughter and breaking a child custody agreement in 2006. Now, these are years before the two of her other children disappeared, prompting national attention over now the nine-month missing persons case. The suit was brought by her third husband, Joseph Ryan, who was Tylee's father. And he filed a motion against her in 2006, alleging she denied him all visitation rights and hid their daughter from him during the months of August of that year. Joseph Ryan had also claimed that Vallow's brother, Alex Cox, had assaulted him with a stun gun in the parking lot over this exact dispute. Now, Ryan and Vallow divorced in 2004, and the two parents relocated from Texas amid the contentious child custody battle over Tylee that lasted up until his death in 2018. His body was found inside an Arizona apartment, and his death was ruled a heart attack. At the time, his body was in fact cremated. So CBS's 48 Hours did an interview with Vallow's mother, and she insists that nothing has happened to these children and believes that they're actually safe. In fact, in one of the questions by the reporter to Janice Cox was, do you think the children could be in a bunker somewhere? Ms. Cox responded, I think that's possible. Of course, nobody in Vallow's family can provide any explanation as to where the children are or what steps they've taken to try and locate them in any way. This story continues to get weirder and weirder, and we will continue to follow it and try and present just the facts. Next on the docket, Letitia Stauch is giving jailhouse interviews. That's right. Last week, Letitia Stauch gave a jailhouse interview to Crime Online. Ms. Stauch apparently gave this interview from the El Paso County Sheriff's Department, and she stated that actually jail has not been that bad because it's given her a time to seriously reflect and ponder things, which she was unable to do prior to her arrest. Now, we've discussed the 32-page affidavit And it's alleged that Stauch waited until she was alone with Gannon on the afternoon of January 27th, when it's alleged that she killed him at their home. She's accused of murdering Gannon inside the bedroom, hiding his body in the trunk of the car. Then it's alleged, apparently, that he was somehow transported unknown location in Douglas County, whereupon ultimately Gannon's body was driven to Pace, Florida, and dumped under a bridge. Now, Ms. Stauch stated to the reporter that she was unable to discuss the details of the case, other than, of course, to explain that she was, in fact, innocent of all charges against her. And she added, for whatever the heck this means, that a witness, quote, officially went on record, end quote, with her defense team, but she couldn't elaborate further due to an ongoing investigation. I'm uncertain what that means, officially went on the record, other than perhaps spoke with her defense investigators in the case. That's hardly on the record, and it really is somewhat more than likely insignificant unless it establishes an alibi or an alternate suspect. We'll wait and see. But as stated in the intro, Stauch believes that being behind bars has actually given her time to process how her life has been turned upside down throughout the most of this past year, indicating that she may be experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder. Ms. Stauch also was complaining that other inmates have taken things from her and that they're selling it on YouTube. I think she maybe means eBay, but she says that inmates are taking things from her and trying to make a buck off of her. She apparently was also asked questions about the photo of the candle that was spilled over in the home. She stated it's unclear where the photo originated from, but she says that she knew nothing about that particular photo. One thing is certain, this case gets also stranger as the days go on, and the fact that Letitia Stauch is giving interviews to the press, even though she says she's, quote, not discussing the case, everything that she says can and will be used against her. So if she denies knowing anything about this photo, but it comes from her camera, who knows where the metadata will actually lead to, it could show, in fact, that she's not being truthful. Statements about this witness going on record could also be potentially used against her if, in fact, she were to testify, or even if she doesn't testify. It's an admission by a party opponent under the rules of evidence, and it is admissible as long as they have the person that was making the statement to. It's a reporter. More than likely, the reporter wouldn't come and testify. They would try to claim perhaps some sort of privilege, but I don't think that would necessarily carry the weight since it's not identifying a source. Even if she didn't, if Ms. Stauch were to testify at trial, it could be used for impeachment purposes as well. If I was her attorney, I would be beating feet straight down to the jail and tell her, when I say don't talk to somebody, it means don't talk to anyone, particularly the news media. It appears as though Ms. Stauch is on her own program, and I'm sure she's going to be a handful for her attorneys, which is only going to make this case even more interesting. Next on the docket, an update on the missing Colorado woman, Suzanne Morphew. For those of you who have not heard about this case yet, apparently Miss Morphew went on a bike ride near her home near Salida, Colorado. That's kind of on the western slope in Chaffee County. It's alleged her husband, who is a firefighter, was not there on Mother's Day and was somehow in Denver for work. He originally wouldn't talk to the news media, but apparently put up a Facebook post yesterday stating that he wants her back. In the statement, I find some of the language somewhat interesting. Now, obviously, no one has been charged, and no one in any way is insinuating that Ms. Morphew's husband had anything to do with this. As you may recall, I was the one on the Heidi Broussard disappearance down in Houston, where a lot of people were jumping the gun on Shane Carey, saying that he had something to do with it. And I said, hold your horses. There is a presumption of innocence. He's done nothing wrong. And it turned out that there's husband, Shane Carey, or boyfriend, fiance, whatever he was at the time, had nothing, in fact, to do with it whatsoever. So by these comments, I'm not trying to insinuate, but it makes me wonder if he knows something or if the police know something. Because he states that he wants her back. We miss you. He says, no questions asked.
Oh, Suzanne, if anyone is out there that can hear this, that has you, please, we'll do whatever it takes to bring you back. We love you. We miss you. Your girls need you. No questions asked. However much they want, I will do whatever it takes to get you back. Honey, I love you. I want you back so bad.
So I don't know if there's some sort of ransom note that's been put out there or if he's speculating that, but it makes me think, what does he know that we don't, or what have the police told him that we don't know as well? It's somewhat interesting. A neighbor reported her missing on May 10th. No signs of her whereabouts whatsoever. Apparently, the police have used dive rescue teams near the water areas. They're using drones, dogs, and search teams as well, looking for Miss Morphew. Hopefully, she is found safe. Next on the docket, Ahmed Arbery case update. For those of you who do not know, Ahmed Arbery was, in fact, shot by the McMichaels, at least the younger McMichaels, while the dad was in the car there aiding and abetting. Obviously, allegedly. And the matter will ultimately be decided more than likely by a jury. The McMichaels were arrested some 10 weeks after the incident with Mr. Arbery in their neighborhood, but only 3 days after the Georgia Bureau of Investigation took over the case from the local district attorney's office. This case came to attention after a Mr. Brian videotaped the incident in the car. Now, Mr. Arbery's family does not believe that he is some good Samaritan in this particular case because he did not do much, if anything, to help Mr. Arbery. The family wants Mr. Brian charged. The authorities have not made that leap yet to charge him with anything. Unless there's some evidence that he was somehow aiding and abetting the situation or encouraging the McMichaels to get out of the car and do something, which doesn't seem to be indicated on the video, it appears as though he is just a witness in this particular case. It is now alleged that there is some video that shows the McMichaels pursuing Mr. Arbery, following him while he jogs for some 4 minutes. Obviously, the video released to date is much shorter than that. We'll see if that actually comes to fruition. Now, the owner of the property in question that Mr. Arbery was supposedly entering, a gentleman by the name of Larry English, confirmed that he has released new video that several people had entered the construction site over the course of several months. There are reportedly some 11 surveillance video clips from October of 2019 through February 23rd of 2020, according to Mr. English's attorney. So among the people entering this property, there appears to be a man and a woman and a man and even children that are going back and forth into this residence under construction. And there's three security camera clips taken December 17th, more than 2 months before the shooting, that allegedly show a black man in a t-shirt and shorts at the site. In the final clip, the man walks away towards the road, then jogs away. There's some speculation that the young man may have been coming onto the property for water. Apparently, there's a hose or some sort of spigot over there in the house. No one has absolutely stated, and it's still somewhat unclear whether that, in fact, is Arbery that is in the residence prior to the February 23rd shooting. The property owner, Mr. English, had wanted to let everybody know that the house was, in fact, wide open and nothing was ever taken from the property. And he doesn't know anyone in the videos which were transmitted to his phone by his security system when someone, in fact, entered the property. Now, as we mentioned last week, the McMichaels have each retained new counsel. And Gregory McMichael's attorney, Michael Hogue, said the details would be revealed at a preliminary court hearing that he plans to request soon. Now, Gregory McMichael, the elder Mr. McMichael, states that Gregory McMichael did not commit murder. Gregory McMichael is not a party to the crime of murder. Now, he's kind of playing semantics because he knows that Gregory McMichael, along with his son Travis, are in fact charged with murder, and Gregory McMichael's is charged under a theory of complicity. If one aids, encourages, or abets, basically assists somebody in the commission of an offense, you can be found guilty under the law just like you had done it yourself. So I appreciate the wordsmithing by Mr. Hoag, but yes, his client is not alleged to have fired the shotgun. It's alleged that Travis McMichael's did, but he knows full well and good that a theory of complicity, he might as well have pulled the trigger himself. We're going to continue to follow this. In our previous videos, we put the video up as well as some of the calls. Feel free to go back and take a listen to any of that. And if you think somehow our timeline is incorrect, please let us know. I don't think I've seen a case where people have split so early in a case and basically picked sides. There are a lot of issues in this particular case. I think the McMichaels have some trouble. Now, I'm not saying this because I think the McMichaels are absolutely guilty. There may be things that we don't know yet. They're given the presumption of innocence. However, under the law, I'm not sure they are going to be able to actually present the defense of citizen self-arrest. And as we've discussed in previous videos, the whole issue about being the initial aggressor may prevent them from actually laying out a self-defense claim whatsoever. The judge would probably give the self-defense even if he's the initial aggressor because they'll allege that Mr. Arbery grabbed the firearm as the facts that we know right now. You only have to present a mere scintilla of evidence for a jury instruction to be considered and the jury be allowed to consider it in the legal instructions. And as I have told judges a lot over the years, judge, cases come back when you refuse instructions. If you give the instruction and the jury has an opportunity to reject it, no issue on appeal. So mostly judges err on the side of caution, give the instruction if there is what they refer to as a mere scintilla of evidence, particularly of self-defense, and they'll let the jury decide. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Our winner for the dumb criminal contestant of the week is last week's winner, Gabriel Monroe. He was the gentleman who apparently got out of his car, somehow got on top of the tanker, and ultimately gets underneath it when it stops and drinks wine from the truck trailer. You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen, but Gabriel Monroe, your dumb criminal contestant of the week. All you have to do is contact us here at Crime Talk, and we will send you a Crime Talk mug. No charge to you. Just tell me where to ship it, because why? You deserve it. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Look at these two characters, just a couple of melon heads. Well, one individual has been identified as Justin Rogers. He's 20, and he has been charged with larceny, underage possession of alcohol, and wearing a mask while committing larceny. The police have pictures of him in his melon head as well as his mugshot. His accomplice, his partner in crime, is still on the loose, apparently not giving up his buddy. Now, wearing a melon, is that enough to get you the dumb criminal contestant of the day and possibly the winner of the week? Oh, no, no, no. I mean, let's face it. Who doesn't put a mask on when they try to commit a crime, right? One of the things the prosecution always has to prove is identity. They have to prove that it is, in fact, the defendant, not one that looks like him, not someone using his identity, but it was, in fact, him. So, in this particular case, this duo, before they went on their little crime spree to obtain alcohol, that's right, they put it on social media. They posted at the local grocery store on Facebook their photos, their photo of them in their melon heads. So Justin Rogers, age 20, of Charlottesville, You are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And the question is, Mr. Rogers, are you going to give up your buddy? And I bet you won't go posting things on Facebook implicating you in a future crime. Now, as we've stated, if you would like some Crime Talk merchandise, some swag, I think is the word they also use, you don't have to become a dumb criminal contestant of the day. You can hit the link below, takes you straight to Teespring. You can order your items and bam, they'll be shipped to you rather quickly. Completely up to you if you want it. Not going to make or break my day, but I like the fact that people are in fact ordering merch. And send us a picture. We will put up your mugshot on social media. As we talked about last week and as we did last week, we are also almost over with the YouTube detention. That's right. June 3rd, we'll be able to go live yet again. So we're going to stream on Facebook tomorrow, Tuesday, May 19th at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. So tomorrow we will be going live May 19th on Facebook. We'll put it back up on YouTube later. And then after we go live, we will have a link for our Patreon members who our membership has shot up amazingly over the last couple of days. And we're going to continue the conversation, maybe talk about some of the cases that even YouTube won't let us talk about, some of the details. We certainly can find lots of those. That are just frankly a little too gory even for Facebook, because Facebook's policy says that anything that could be sensitive subject matter could in fact be blocked, demonetized, or basically taken down by YouTube. So we're going to give that a shot. We hope that you will join us. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.